Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carlson. And we are in the post-Dublin NFL coitus glow. John Balfe, myself and yourself attended the game.
Yeah, we did. I'm ashamed to say it was my first ever live NFL experience. And I'm even more ashamed to say that it involved the Pittsburgh Steelers from my sit here wearing a Cleveland Browns hat. But it was good to get a little bit of a perception of the AFC North seed in real time. But yeah, no, honestly, though, great game. Better game than I think many people were expecting. And just, you know, the spectacle is amazing to see. It really, really is.
Yeah, Mike Carlson is with us as usual. Mike, it was my first NFL game. Been to a few now at this stage. But the second most international series game ever watched on television. The 9 million people watched the last quarter of it. And by all accounts from on the ground and what I've heard from people who are working at the game, that includes Crow Park, that includes the GA, that includes Fulch Ireland, a massive success. And we would expect them to come back.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they will. The television ratings surprised me a little bit, simply because it wasn't really a marquee game for people at home. But I think a lot of it probably was the lure of seeing Dublin, and unlike Skylar Thompson getting a warm welcome.
Yes, it's the one Steelers event we didn't get to attend. was poor Skylar, but it clicked the over. We had the DK Metcalf touchdown. We had another long-range
pass. Great touchdown, too, wasn't that? Yeah. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
It was a great game. It was loads of fun. Lots of scoring, lots of turnovers, lots of, like, good play and bad play. Exactly what you want on a day.
Yeah, and the exactly. And a quick shout-out as well. If I may just do a quick shout-out to our friend Murph, who was at the end of the first quarter, sure. I think. He was given the opportunity to take... from the pitch now, from the field, to take 3 field goals. And if he nails all 3 of them between the posts, he won €5,000, our friend Murph. So well done, Murph. And not we're bad. Not jealous in the slightest.
Someone may sign him before the end of the season.
Yeah, there's a couple of teams out there that can do with a reliable kicker, huh?
Yeah. On the other hand, if Joe Flacco could complete 3 straight passes, he could have won.
Hey, I don't want to talk about that.
But Aaron Rodgers, it's nice to see Aaron Rodgers molding into a game manager type player. I thought, you know, that was a very controlled game, not really, you know, a peak Aaron Rodgers kind of game, but a really controlled game. He knew where the ball was, you know, was going. Obviously, he's got great vision as a quarterback, but he was putting it right on the money. I think it's kind of him and Arthur Smith are starting to bond now, you know, over the ayahuasca or whatever. But ran that offense pretty well.
Yeah, he did. And as well, I don't know if this is really an accurate statement to make or whatever, or if it's even relevant, but it did remind me a little bit of the final days of Roethlisberger in there, because that's clearly an organization that is well known for kind of having veteran QBs. And it just seemed, now I might be overthinking this, but it seemed that the Steelers and Tomlin and maybe Arthur Smith as well, just have this, you know, very good perception of what it takes for an older quarterback to be successful in this league. And I think you kind of saw it there against the Vikings, particularly, you know, hold it up in comparison to, now he's not the same age, of course, but Carson Wentz would be a veteran of this league. And he just seemed to be, like, again, it's a different O-line and there's all sorts of other factors that go into this as well. But he just seemed to be less in control of the environment than Rodgers was.
It's classic Tomlin ball. I mean, to some extent, Steelers too, although the Chuck Knoll Steelers were a big play team as well. You know, they controlled the ball on the ground with Franco Harris, but they also had 2 great deep receivers and Bradshaw had a great arm. But what Tomlin wants to do is control the clock, control the ball, and not turn it over and let his defense win games. And, you know, and basically DK Metcalf accepted. That was pretty much what happened.
Did you guys both hear of the issue regarding the play clock in Krug Park? Is that did you see those headlines? Apparently, I saw an interview with Kevin O'Connell, the Vikings coach, beforehand. He says, and this is obviously affects both teams now, but he said he was informed 3 minutes prior to the start of the game that there was a syncing issue with the clocks that are behind the goalposts, essentially the ones that the teams actually use as a reference point for shot play clocks and all that sort of thing as well.
The
So
25, yeah. The
yeah, so in towards the end of the game,
40 second clock.
Yeah, and apparently towards the end of the game, they just shut them off entirely. So you'll recall that, I don't remember the play exactly now, but it was in that last drive when the Vikings were trying to get down the field to get what would have been a game-tying field goal. They had no idea where the play clock was. The quarterback couldn't see it. And if you recall, in that series, there was a delay of game penalty that brought them from, I think it brought them to 4th and 17, basically all but ending any possible chances they had of getting into field goal territory. To his credit, O'Connell kind of took it on the chin a little bit, but I certainly think some other coaches might have been a little bit more vociferous in their criticism of the situation, because that sort of thing has a direct impact on how you get down the field and how you score your points.
Interesting that obviously the game was played on grass, which you mentioned. I did see one slip for a Viking player, which was...
Justin Jefferson, yeah.
Yes, it was Jefferson's slip, but other than that...
Like, he could have been getting into the corner there, and clearly...
Oh, I think he was getting a touchdown if he got it in stride.
In a three-point game, obviously that's going to change the game script and the game will develop differently from that point onwards, but if you can point to a situation where you play... We talked about on last week's show, a lot of these players who come over to this part of the world complain about the turf, complain about the grass, just because it is different. And as Mike pointed out last week, it's usually cut to different lengths. But then again, at the same time, I don't know too much about this because I do know the Croke Park relayed the surface just for this match specifically. So maybe that was the issue rather than anything else. But certainly it seems to have made an impact in the result of the game.
I'll tell you, we should send you guys to a game every week and then, just get the micro report. And then
Red Zone ruins it. I know,
it's great. Yeah.
And the other thing about the pitch, which I will say, it's interesting to say that because I was reading during the week about the grass and the turf, et cetera, right? Because obviously the World Cup is in America next year and it's being held in a lot of American football stadiums. And FIFA, as part of it, have said that you have to put grass. So they are going to pull up the turf, put grass down, and then when the World Cup ends, they're going to pull the grass up and put the turf back down.
Maybe, maybe not. Though that happened the last time the U.S. hosted the World Cup. Do we have
the history of the turfs with injuries, Mike? Because that's what they're saying. All the injuries are because of turf.
Yeah. But no, that was FIFA. You can't play on artificial turf. That's always been FIFA's rule. But it happened to QPR trying to do that in Britain 20 years ago, maybe 25. What I think is more interesting is
there was a game during the week Spurs played on an artificial pitch.
Yeah, a couple of teams have. That's probably
They. I think what's more interesting right now is that I know that they're trying to schedule certain countries to avoid playing in America for as long as possible because of all the problems, vis-a-vis visas and things like that. And given that the United States is now at war with Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., and I think I'm forgetting one of the cities that we're at war.
Someone else that voted blue, presumably.
We're at war with. I'm surprised the NFL schedule is going to go ahead this week because I don't see how you can take, expect 60 or whatever thousand people to go to the stadium when the streets are on fire and the NFL is trying to keep people safe and all. It doesn't, What I really want to see is one of the Mannings go, Omaha, Omaha, 25-4-47, hut. And if for those of you who don't get the reference, the 25th Amendment is when you remove a president for being incontinent, and Trump is the 47th president.
Did you say incontinent or incompetent?
Whatever.
Might be interchangeable in this specific case, but anyway.
That's a slow-burning joke, that is. One for the history nerds there.
Anyway, let's get to week 5.
49ers at Rams, 7-2 about the 49ers. Rams are 2-9. 8.5 is the spread. 43.5 is the over under. Mike, I'm just going to give this to you. You just tell us what you think is going to happen for those who managed to catch it.
I mean, Shanahan has kind of done well against the Rams, especially on the road, strangely enough. But Purdy's out. Pearsall's now out. Johnson's out. That's the next two receivers down the pecking order. Mac Jones is back at quarterback. I think the Rams can cover this one. They might not. You might want to avoid that. But I see this as possibly an under as well. It'll be an interesting game, but probably not a beautiful one to watch.
Well, speaking of not so beautiful ones to watch, and this is not a dig at Cleveland Browns, but it sort of
No,
is.
it's a
Well,
dig. It's a dig, and
the
it's a dig that
Vikings. Nobody.
lands.
I'll explain why in a minute. I'll explain why the Vikings take on the Cleveland Browns in the first game taking place in London. Minnesota Vikings are 8-15. The Cleveland Browns are 6-4. 3.5 is the spread. 35.5 is the over/under. Obviously, the Vikings become the first team to play back-to-back international series games, and the reason that the over/under is a 35.5 is because it's possible that they'll have 37-mile-an-hour winds in a partially covered stadium.
Oh, I didn't know that actually. That's it. Look at you doing the NFL weather watch updates now, Kieran. You're stealing my gimmick here.
I know. Yep. There is a hurricane or storm, and there is a chance that, and a good chance, well, the UK will get hit, but London could be badly hit on game day. Really affects everything.
Yeah, it could. And yeah, you noted there I'm not sure in the history of this show. We've seen many over-unders that are lower than 35.5, which we have for this particular game. And going like based upon what you say there about the weather, which Kieran and I had not looked into. So congratulations for that, and thank you kindly. But I think the over-under would have been. I'm not even sure the weather is baked into that, to be honest with you, because we're looking at a very, very low over-under here, regardless, even if they're playing in Hawaii in glorious weather. That is because both of these teams, the Minnesota Vikings and the Cleveland Browns, are in some senses, not all, in some senses, quite close mirror images of each other in the sense that they both have strong defenses and, I'll put this kindly, underwhelming offenses. And in Minnesota's case, we saw them play in Dublin last week, obviously. And I think they lost one more, they lost another player there from their offensive line as well, which is already a quite beat up offensive line. And as we all know at this point, we've talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, they're playing Carson Wentz, who is their backup QB. Remains to be seen if JJ McCarthy is an NFL standard quarterback, but we're not going to find out while he's sitting on the sidelines, injured. But we kind of have discovered at this point that Carson Wentz isn't necessarily, he's not a starter in this league. He's not one of the 32 best, qualified quarterbacks to play American football at the moment. So this could very easily just come down to who manages the weather better, which that's a crapshoot. Who knows what'll happen there? If it's as bad as you say it might be, Kieran, it can come down to also manages or who manages the travel better. And as we well know, the Vikings have been in this time zone since last Thursday evening. So that's a week from the moment that we record this podcast on Thursday evening. So the Vikings have been in Dublin stroke London for quite a while now. And if it's the same as last week, the Browns should be arriving this evening or early tomorrow. Now, another wrinkle to take into this game is the fact that Joe Flacco has been unceremoniously taken away from the starting quarterback position in Cleveland, and the third round, or no, wait, sorry, was he a third? Yeah, he was a third round pick out of Oregon. Dylan Gabriel is going to be making his debut at under center for the Browns. Gabriel, who is an undersized quarterback with, he seems to have a decent average arm, but from what I gather from watching him throughout preseason and some of his college tape as well, Gabriel's main asset is his he's able to read defenses quite quickly and he's just able to keep the offense ticking. So he's very much sort of like an underpowered Tua Tagovailoa. So I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, but
More
that's how people are
like
reading
an
it.
more like an overpowered Kyler Murray.
Yeah, potentially. But he is at the same time now the second biggest, he holds the record or the second highest points scored in the history of college football, which on the surface sounds impressive, but it's also the fact that he's played six seasons in college, including the weird kind of COVID year. And also when you take into consideration that the holder of that record, the number one point scorer in college football history is Case Keenum. So it doesn't necessarily translate to a stellar NFL career, obviously. So in this game, I think, that over under being 35.5, I just kind of suspect that normally I kind of just knee jerk to the under when it comes to Browns, and particularly at the Vikings in the mix, because two stout defenses and two somewhat anemic offenses, the Browns being far more anemic than the Vikings, that would lend yourself to be thinking towards the under. But in this one, I just have a feeling that the market has potentially overcompensated a small bit. So I think the over 35.5 here might be kind of the smart play.
I'm really interested to see what Kevin Stefanski does right here, because Quinshon Judkins looked pretty good, and Gabriel can run, various RPO option kind of offenses. You're absolutely right. He's a quick. He makes quick decisions. What was it? 3 years at Central Florida and 2 years at Oklahoma, and then one
And
at
then,
Oregon.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's been around.
I mean, I think they could put together a game plan that could be pretty efficient and let their defense do the rest of the work. I don't think that's a ridiculous idea. And I think I oft off also kind of agree with you that the over may well be in play here, wind and rain, notwithstanding.
We'll have to check the weather forecast, gentlemen, on the day. But hopefully, look, if you're going to the game, I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's as good as the Dublin game. Unfortunately, obviously, the weather probably won't be the same. But look, it should be a good game. The 6 o'clock contest starts our red zone coverage. The Broncos take on the Philadelphia Eagles. The Denver Broncos are 13-8. The Philly Eagles are 1-2. 4.5 is the spread. 43.5 is the over-under. Mike, I'll come to you first on this. Denver head to Philly. How do you see it going?
The interesting thing, first off, I think, is that the spread went up only by a point, but still 3.5 to 4.5. I was thinking that Philly minus 3.5 was a good bet, and I think there's still a good bet at 4.5, but obviously not quite as good. And the thing that worries me is that the Eagles had 0 passing yards in the second half last week.
Did they?
Such
I
a
odd
zero,
game.
such
I didn't
an
pick up on
odd
that.
game.
That's bizarre.
It was a very odd game. They ran up a big lead, and then, as mentioned on the show last week, the 90+ degree heat and humidity in Tampa appeared to wear on the Big Beefs up front, and Tampa made another attempt at a patented Baker Mayfield kind of comeback, which came very close. Philadelphia got some great plays. Quinyon Mitchell had just an amazing game at corner for the Eagles. And Cooper DeJean wasn't that far behind it. So I like the Eagles in this. I don't see the over under at 43. Is it 43.5 still, did you say? The over under at 43.5 is weighted pretty well, I think. I don't see Denver being explosive offensively against Philly's defense. And again, it's not quite, it's when I say weighted well, if I had to go over under, I'd go over on it. But I'll take Philly. I would take Philly giving the points even at 4-5.
Okay, Philly minus 4.5. John, you actually got up during that. Did you turn the oven on? Because you told us to tell you to turn the oven on at a time. Have you turned the oven on?
I turned the oven on, Kieran. Thanks. I put it up to 180. I'm having I won't tell you what I have for dinner, but
One.
it's I want it very soon.
Okay.
Oh
180 for 30 minutes. I would say it's a pizza.
I'd say it's
no.
roadkill.
No. Nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's an interesting game too, just a quick mention of it. Houston and Baltimore, who are both 1-3, are playing in the early window. Both these teams, remember, are the favorites, preseason favorites, to win their divisions.
Good
And now
point,
they're
yeah.
fighting for their lives. And Cooper Rush is going to start at quarterback for Baltimore, which sounds bad, but Rush, career-wise, mostly at Dallas, is 9-5 as an NFL starter.
But he
I
did
didn't
have the
realize that.
magnificent Cowboys with him. John, Broncos and Eagles, or you can touch on the shit show. It's going to be Texans and Ravens, whichever you'd like.
I'll do I'm interested in this the Broncos Eagles game. I think we sort of touched on this as well last week. Eagles are they're kind of doing that thing where they're just kind of just relentlessly getting over the line, but I still think that the underlying stats and the underlying kind of themes throughout their play suggest a little area of concern, I would say. Like they're still not they're among the league's worst in net yards per play. They're Their offense is just middle of the table in EPA per play. Meanwhile, Denver are far ahead of them in both of those specific statistics. Now, look, I think statistics are sometimes misleading in that you can kind of fashion any argument you want if you find the right things and stitch them together. But I think there's a little bit of leeway here for an upset win by the Broncos. So that's kind of particularly like four, their Eagles are 4.5 point favorites. I think with that, I'm inching ever so slightly closer towards Denver in this one. I think they're a well-coached team. They've not really got the they haven't really hit fifth gear yet so far this season, I think. But this is clearly the sort of game against the champions that they're going to be going in there, all systems go. This is the sort of game they've circled on the calendar since preseason as like this is our. Nail our flag up here and just get everything where it needs to be for this particular game. And I think the Broncos really have to show up clearly and they have to play very, very well, but I think this is a game that they can win.
Okay. Should there be that much smoke coming out of your kitchen?
Here, and don't disrespect my culinary skills. They're very impressive occasionally.
I've insulted you a lot, but I've crossed the
Don't
line
go to
last
that
night.
territory.
The nine or we're going to look at the Tampa Bucks Seattle Seahawks game. It's 9:05. Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 6-4. Seattle Seahawks are 8-15. 3 points to spread. 44.5 is the over under. Gentlemen, you both picked this one. Michael, I'll come to you first. I got to be honest. I can't put a finger on either team, what exactly they are this season, especially Tampa, who I'm just. Is it just let Baker do his thing and hope for the best?
It seems to be, doesn't it? He didn't against Philadelphia put together much until the second half. He plays better in the breakdown game than he does when you keep him in the pocket. And the game plan for almost every team that plays him is to keep him in the pocket. You could hear Tom Brady doing the game last week, and he kept talking about the cage. Keep him in a cage, keep him in a cage. And when you do that, he has trouble seeing downfield because he's short, and this applies to a lot of shorter quarterbacks. But when he's in the open field, he may not be the best running quarterback in the league, but I think he may be the best at scrambling and running and seeing downfield at the same time. He's got remarkable vision, and you saw him against the Eagles two or three times. Getting the attention of a specific receiver and directing him to where he wants to go. And one of the passes he put in was literally over the defensive back's head, right? Almost parallel to his ears and into the hands of the receiver because the defensive back wasn't looking, and he was aware of that. So, I think he's a rare talent who's made a couple of coaches look good in the past 2 years, because they've let him use that ability and they comment on it, And Tampa has a good offensive line. Bucky Irving's a good running threat. So I think they're a real threat here. And Seattle's hard to figure because Sam Darnold seems to be getting into the kind of form he had in Minneapolis last year. And they've played pretty well on the road. And Mike McDonald's defense, ex-Baltimore Raven coach, seems to be also getting better. So, I mean, the Bucks are getting points, as you would. Seattle's the favorite. I think this one goes over 44-5, even though they're both pretty good defensive teams. And a 0.5 is not enough to get me off Seattle. But again, who knows what happens in the fourth quarter. So I still take
Exactly.
Seattle giving the
Okay.
3.5.
Okay, John, what do you think about this one?
My initial thoughts on this game are Sam Darnold, the Seahawks quarterback, has to play well. He has to be able to find his receivers if they're going to be coming out of this game with a win. And the reason I say that is because so far this season, I think Kenneth Walker has played really well. Charbonnet has been pretty good at backing him up as well. The run game has been good. The stats I have here say that the Seahawks have run the ball on over half of their plays, 53% to be specific, which, if that's correct, is the second most in the NFL. Now, the issue with that is that Tampa Bay has been pretty elite against the run so far. They're first in the league in rush EPA. They were allowing only 3.3 yards per carry across the entire season so far, which is the second best in the NFL. So if Tampa is able to slow down this Seattle ground game, and that'll force Sam Darnold to have to find him. And he's got a great receiver now in Jackson Smith and Jigba. That's working really, really well. But JSN has only got one touchdown so far in the season, despite putting up like basically a 100-yard game every game so far, give or take. So I think I'd be going Buccaneers here with the points. To me, that is the safer bet of the two. But I think the other interesting angle of this is that it's the battle of the two former Carolina Panthers quarterbacks going head to head here in Mayfield and Darnold. And I just wonder. Now, I'll actually ask this to both of you guys: Mayfield, Darnold, or Bryce Young? Where are you going if you had to pick right now, Mike?
Mayfield.
Yeah.
Mayfield, I assume.
That's the correct thing. But there are three highly drafted quarterbacks. Obviously, Darnold was in the same draft as Mayfield. He was picked, was it third? I don't recall exactly, second or third, in that
By the
particular one by the
Jets.
Jets. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, another little interesting wrinkle. And I watched actually Baker Mayfield's press conference during the week, kind of talking about this game, and he did say that he gets on very, very well with Sam Darnold. They developed quite a good relationship when they were together. But the reporter asked him in some variation of these particular words. It was like, do you miss the good old days at Carolina when you were with Sam Darnold? And he's like, the good old days? You kidding me? It was something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along those lines. So yeah, I think of the two, I think Mayfield is the better quarterback in this regard. And look, I just think that they have a little more to their advantage in this one, despite the fact that I think they're a little bit beat up, and I think Bucky Irving might actually be missing the game. I think he's got
Oh,
an
I
ankle
missed
sprain,
that.
as far as I know. So that could impact things a little bit in this one. But again, no Mike Evans. That's the thing as well. But thankfully, Mecca Buka has kind of filled that gap, and Chris Godwin came back last week as well. So there are options for Mayfield to throw to this time around, even despite the fact that Mike Evans is gone. So I just think there's more favor stacked up on the Buccaneers side of things here than there is for Seattle. So I'd be favoring Buccaneers with the points here.
Okay.
Who do you like better if we're doing comparisons, Jackson Dart or Spencer Rattler? You said Carson Wentz wasn't one of the 32 best starting quarterbacks in the league. That means you've got him
It means
below
he's better
Spencer
than me. I mean,
Rattler
that
and
means
Jackson
I
Dart.
think Rattler is better than him. Well, no, I think I don't know. I'll happily change my tune if he proves me otherwise, but I just don't think Rattler is that good, to be honest. So I would take in that very binary choice, Mike. I'm taking Jackson Dart if after
I
one
would take
game.
Jackson Dart
He
too.
looked pretty damn good, I have to say. We don't do much Giants chat on this show, but he looked good, right?
He
Yeah,
looked an
no, he
awful
did.
lot like Danny Dimes looked in that first season when they went to when they went to second season was it when they went
Yeah.
to the playoffs, with him running the ball a lot. That's
Yeah,
a
yeah.
better
But as we have seen countless times in the NFL, the idea is if you're a quarterback that's drafted to either of the New York teams, you just have to like hold ground until you get traded somewhere else, and then you turn good. So like if he just
Best way
doesn't
to do
disgrace himself, he'll end up at a good team somewhere down the line, just like Daniel Jones did, just like Sam Darnold has done so far as well. So yeah, that's more to see. But yeah, I know we're kind of straying from the point here, but just on the Jackson Dart thing, I think he looked very good last week.
okay. Sunday Night Football, excuse me, I'm not too sure why, is the Patriots at the Bills. 11-4 the Patriots. The Bills are 1-4, 8.5 spread. 49.5 is the over under, Mike. Your Patriots are Sunday Night Football, and I'm not quite sure why this game would have been decided only a few short weeks ago as well. Why are we watching this?
I'm not sure either, to be honest. They kind of have to give everybody a shot at some kind of prime time appearance. But Stefon Diggs Bowl. It's a good divisional rivalry. The Bills are now what the Patriots were. They've won four times in a row, I think, and look to be pretty well set for a fifth. I don't see the Patriots winning this game. 7-5 is probably a flattering line for the Bill. I mean, I would have thought it would be more like 8, but the Patriots are coming off a big win over Carolina. Carolina being the key word in that sentence.
Definitely.
I think Buffalo's defense, which tries to control you, is going to probably create some problems for Drake May. I think the Patriots' defense looked good against Carolina, but they have a couple of injuries, especially at safety, which could be a bad sign. I think it's a stretch to think the Patriots will cover, but they do have a way of keeping games close. They haven't really been blown out of a game. Remember with Pittsburgh, they basically were in a position to win that game if they didn't keep handing the ball over to the Steelers. So I think I'd rather probably take the Patriots and the points than Buffalo if I'm just feeling a little adventurous. But I also think the under in this one at 49.5 is the way to go.
Okay, so the Patriots are plus 8.5 now. I think, did you say seven or like a?
8.5. 8.5 is where I would have put it at the beginning. It was 7.5 at the beginning of the week, when I wrote down the spreads and lines. Yeah, eight point five. If I were going to bet a team, I'd take the Patriots in 8.5, but I like the under in this better.
Johnny B, would you take the Patriots with 8.5?
I certainly would, Kieran O'Connor. Thank you for asking. The reason I say that as well, I think, look, the Bills are the Bills. They're just, a behemoth, really, at this point. They're going to win their division. But what we've seen from them so far, they've played the New York Jets, they've played the Miami Dolphins, and they played the New Orleans Saints. So, look, it's been an easy start for them. And you can also kind of potentially, like, certainly last season, you could have added the Patriots to that kind of list of underperforming teams. This season, there seems to be a little bit something else under this Mike Vrabel stewardship, and I think we have to also acknowledge the fact that Drake May is starting to look like a pretty good quarterback for them as well. He looks like he was a good pick in the draft a year or two ago, and he's starting to kind of come into his own as a young, dynamic, kind of throwing, rushing quarterback. So he looks good, I think. Bills have been, even against that a lower kind of strength of schedule that I just described, their defense has been a little bit shaky. 22nd in EPA, 17th in success rate in the league. So not brilliant, but also not terrible. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that there's a little bit of uncertainty about exactly how good this Buffalo Bills team is. Like, if you would put them against some more difficult teams, there's a good chance that their win-loss ratio could have been wildly different to how it is now. But at the same time, it's Josh Allen. It's a good team. They're experienced. They're a unit. They know what they're doing. So smart, obviously the smart money here is just put on the Bills just to win in a money line sense. But with the Patriots plus 8.5, I think that's kind of where I'm looking at the moment. And again, yeah, I think if Drake May gets this going, if Diggs in, the Diggs Bowl, it's a revenge game, as Mike sort of hinted at there a moment ago as well. So sometimes crazy things can happen, but I think the best case scenario, just from a viewing perspective, is just some sort of like AFC East shootout, high scoring, crazy kind of game, kind of like we saw with the Patriots last week, putting, I can't even remember how many points they put on the Panthers, but it was quite a few. It was a large score in that particular game. So nothing would make me happier to see a large or a high scoring shootout in this one. But I think the Patriots can certainly keep it in within 8.5.
You mentioned the Jets, and I just want to point out, is the line there still 2.5 against Dallas? The Jets are home to Dallas.
I have 2.5, yeah.
I mean, the only thing that interests me here is that Dallas has put up 40 points in each of the two home games they've played, one win, one tie, and they've only scored 34 in the two games they played on the road.
That's
So
interesting.
I think they're a little bit vulnerable here to the Jets. I wish the Jets were getting more points. I'd be more
Would
interested.
you like
But
a Justin Fields stat? Oh,
yes,
always.
please.
He has never won a game where a team has scored 21 points on him. So if Dallas scored
Wow.
21, statistically, he has no chance of winning the game because he's never won one of them.
Right. Okay, so 17, that's the
Yeah,
average on the road. So
exactly.
it's a Jets win. Give the Jets two and a half. Go
They
under
shouldn't, no
40s.
need to even play the game now. It's a formality given that stat. So just what Kieran
Okay.
said.
Who wants to do
Yeah.
like 60 seconds on Chiefs at Jags?
Mike does.
Fascinating, fascinating game. This is really is a who's for real in week five kind of game. The Chiefs had a good one last week with Worthy back, gave them a kind of legit wide receiver to draw on. I'm still not sold completely on the Jags, but Trevor Lawrence, in a way, looks like a rookie quarterback being brought on, the way that his previous two coaches should have brought him on. And flashes of brilliance, flashes of ordinariness, mediocrity maybe. Their defense is better, but I think last week we saw a really inspired defensive performance by the Chiefs, and I'm going to think they can take that on the road. The Jags are getting 3.5 at home. They're home dogs to the Chiefs. And I think a lot of people will be tempted to take them in the points. Kansas City traveling west to east on a Sunday, but it's a late game. I'm going to stick with Kansas City even giving the points.
Yeah,
Okay.
I'll just jump on top of that real quick if I can. I
Sure.
won't. My kind of made all the points there. I just think the my thoughts on the specific game, but the 46.5 over under, I think the matchup points to kind of a low scoring contest. So I'd be looking at the under. I would just like to pose a quick question about the Jags to one or both of you. Mike, you mentioned Trevor Lawrence there. Is he a product of bad coaching, or is he? I hesitate to use the word bust, but he came into the league as the
I
best
wouldn't call
quarterback
I
prospect since Andrew Luck.
yeah
Like, what's going on?
yeah absolutely. I don't think you can call him a bust. I mean, those were high expectations, and he's been a competent NFL quarter. I mean, not competent, but a league average at least, probably better than average. I think part of what's going on was that when he was at Clemson, it was his wide open game to play and win, and most of the games Clemson played and won were against teams that aren't anywhere near as good as Clemson, which is not to say he didn't win big games. Obviously he did. He won the college championship game. But when you're in the NFL, it's a different story because you're playing more good teams with better defenses. And I do think coaching is a part of it. I think Urban Meyer was a horrible, he and Meyer were a horrible matchup, regardless of what you think of Urban Meyer. And he and Peterson were not a great matchup because I think by then Peterson was kind of laid back and relaxed. And I think he needs some discipline. I think that's the bit he doesn't have right now. And I think that's what Cohen's bringing to him is you've got to concentrate. You've got to be disciplined on every throw, all through the game, and make the easy throws, make the boring throws, and then the rest of it will come in. Will come in. I still think there's time for him to grow as a quarterback for sure.
And just on that same thing, if I can as well, what do you make? What do you both make of Travis Hunter so far? Clearly, the second pick in the draft came in with a massive reputation as a playing both offense and defense. But to me, so far, like we've got a very, very small sample size in this one. And he's clearly a talented player. It's not an issue about talent, but to me, the fact that because of the fact that they're It just doesn't seem like they know they're not making a
They're
decision
caught.
about how to play him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the
Yeah.
result, in my perception of this, is that they've just got a mediocre wide receiver and they've got a mediocre defensive back.
I think he's a really good defensive back, and he's
Well,
been
not
better
yeah.
than
That's kind of what I mean. But he's not.
he's
Neither
been
of them are sticking.
better
Neither of them
than
are sticking.
mediocre. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's harder for him to play wide receiver. If you the games I've seen, what I've seen of them, they've been trying to get him the ball in space. Hitches, some other like slants and things like that, just to get him in open field. That's not what you want your really good receiver to be. You want to, if I were the Jags, and I said this right from the start, I would be playing him at corner and using him as a gadget player occasionally on offense, and really working hard to come up with plays, while realizing that if he's in the lineup as a gadget player, the other team is going to concentrate on him. So sometimes you're going to be using him as a decoy to get. But I'd be playing him. I think his road to quick success in the NFL is a corner is at cornerback. I think he's got real talent at cornerback, and he should be playing there all the time.
Let's do best bets, guys. Mike, I'll let you give the results. I won last week, so I'm going to come in early. And
Okay. Well, so did John.
yeah, well, fuck him.
Yeah, the results last week were disappointing for the undefeated Iron Mike Iron Man, taking the Chargers in what was probably the biggest upset loss of the season to the Giants by 3. The Chargers were giving the Giants 5.5 at home. Kieran had the over in the Pittsburgh Minnesota game. at 40.5, and they combined for 45 points. And John had the under with his beloved Cleveland, we're not scoring in this game, Browns. And
it hurts.
the under was 44.5, and the final score was 34-10. So John hit the under by half a point.
I always knew it was going to be like
All you
that.
need.
That's exactly what I thought was going to happen.
So standings, if you like, Kieran and I each have one loss, and John has two.
Chargers minus 2.5 for me at home
Oh,
against the Commanders. Lovely person. John, you can go next.
Okay, I'm going to go Chargers minus 2.5 on this one. No, my bet. I'm going to go with the. We talked about it
Is it
briefly in the
down to
show.
2.5? I was taking them at 3. I get to take them.
Well, you can take them at 3.
Five, yeah.
Kieran will take them at 2.5.
Yeah.
My bet is going to be in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Seattle Seahawks game that we discussed 5 or 10 minutes ago on this show. I just have a feeling that the over under 44.5 can be beaten, so I'm going with the over 44.5, which is a change for me. Look, I also strongly think that the under or the over in the Browns game is up for play as well, but I think I just can't bank on those two offenses getting there, but I still think it might probably happen. But either way, I think the over in the 44.5 in the Buccaneers Seahawks game is a better bet, so that's what I'm going with.
Finally, Mike.
I knew there must have been a reason why you were jumping in. I don't know how you knew that was my
I'm
bet.
Feeling someone
I'll
might
go
take it.
I'll go under 49.5 in New England to Buffalo.
Brilliant. Okay. And that is it, gentlemen. Thank you so much, John. Thank you for joining me. Hope your food is passable.
It'll be mediocre, as always, Kieran. That's what it's going to be.
And Mike, hope you're keeping well. You're doing good. Everything's good.
Everything's good. Everything's getting better all the time.
Nice.
Oh, yes.
I'm
yes,
joining.
Mike's
I'll
showing
be
us this
joining. I'll
back.
Be joining you guys any day now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My thanks to everyone for listening, and thanks for getting in touch. As always, do get in touch over Twitter or through the email as well. For those of you heading to the game, have a wonderful time. I hope the weather is pretty okay, and I hope it's a really, really enjoyable game. Enjoy another Sunday of NFL football, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Any Given Game Day. Bye for now.